Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, brewing and barrel aging craft beer since 1988. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
That is Anarchy in the UK by punk icons The Sex Pistols. Jim, as we've discussed on the show before, the history of rock music's filled with landmark years where everything seems to change, new movements emerge, and a whole bunch of great records get released. Listeners may remember that we've examined the years 1967 and 1991 on past episodes of the show. Today, we'll turn our attention to another game-changing year in music history, 1977. We're going to spend two episodes looking at the impact of punk rock in the U.S. and the U.K. And this week, we're going to focus in on the U.K. because that year saw a deluge of incredible releases from native bands like The Clash, The Sex Pistols, Wire, Buzzcocks, and many others in the exploding London punk scene.
Absolutely, Greg. And to discuss that scene, we go now to Wales, where we're talking to John Savage, author of the definitive book on this era from the Brit perspective, England's Dreaming. John, it is a pleasure to have you on Sound Opinions. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good to be here.
John, your book does an excellent job of taking us through the sociological, cultural, and historic factors that led up to punk exploding in 77. But can you set the scene for us? Why did this music explode at this place and time?
I think that it was obvious that something like punk was going to happen. If you were a music fan, which of course I was and still am, you knew that something was going to happen because for several reasons, really. First off, you had these precursors. You had people like the Flaming Groovies. You had people like, obviously, Dr. Feelgood in London, who are fantastically important. Streets are full of signs, arrows pointing everywhere. Bars are full of people trying to get a breath of air. Listen to the weatherman praying for a drop of rain. Look into the sky, the sky's full of aeroplanes. And at the end of 75, we in the UK started getting wind of the CBGB scene. There were articles about CBGBs in the British music press. And so it was obvious that something was going to happen, and musically it needed to happen for all the obvious reasons. And obviously everybody cites the dreadfulness of progressive rock, but it actually wasn't that. It was the fact that mainstream pop music was absolutely hateful. When I think of 1976, I remember my life being ruined by three different records. And I remember hearing these records nonstop, and I totally hated them. And it wasn't a casual hate, it was an absolute burning hate. And it was Save Your Kisses for Me by the Brotherhood of Man, which is a Eurovision Song Contest winner. It was Fernando by ABBA. And by the way, let nobody tell you that ABBA were hip. Back in the day, ABBA were the enemy. And the final one was Kiki D and Elton John, Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Yeah.
Whenever I think of why punk had to happen, all I have to do is remember those three records. But take it from me, the pop music of the day was absolutely terrible. All you have to do is look at any BBC Top of the Pops programme from 1976, and it's full of novelty records, it's full of not even good disco records, it's full of terrible disco records, and inane DJs, and the whole level is sort of at a 10-year-old. And there's no guts, and there's no life, and there's nothing there that seems relevant to kind of teenage problems and also the problems of the UK at the time, which were probably fairly similar to that of the US, only probably much more advanced. I know in New York, and New York was in a particularly bad state, so there was a similarity between New York and London. Let's just take those two cities. And that was to do with the recession it was to do with, certainly in the UK, with rising unemployment, although nothing like the level of youth unemployment we have now, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had deserted inner cities. You'd had slum clearance, but you hadn't had the money to rebuild. So there were quite large areas of London which are now prime real estate, but then were just, you know, derelict buildings, destroyed, you know, corrugated iron. So the whole thing felt extremely dead. It felt as though everything was dead.
And the term punk itself is a term that would have been looked upon with aspersion 5 years earlier. Why was it embraced and where did it come from?
I think it's really funny that punk rock now has acquired this kind of machismo. Punk is a passive homosexual, okay? A punk in 30s and 40s is like a gunsel, is like the lowest of the low.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like what, you know, Jefferson Airplane said in Volunteers, which is whatever it is you say we are, you know, it's taking on what people say about you, the worst thing that people can say about you, and throwing it back in their face. It's a handy term, really. And it was known as punk pretty much in the UK from spring 76, and people tried to change it and make it into something else, but punk it started and punk it always was.
One of the points in your book, John, I think, was that New York punk was ahead of London in terms of just getting on the map, getting records out, getting noticed. Sum that up for us a little bit, because I know Malcolm McLaren, the future manager of the Sex Pistols, was fascinated, was galvanized in seeing a band like the New York Dolls and put some of that back into the London music scene. Summarize that story for us.
Yes, I've never been a one that gets into, you know, London punk is better than New York punk. There have been all these arguments over the years and quite rancorous. And I just think it's really stupid. What I really think about it is that punk was an idea that happened to different people in various Western cities in the US and in Europe at around the same time. Certainly the impulse was there in Paris, it was there in Cleveland, it was there in London, and it was definitely there in New York. And in fact, obviously, the most organized expression of punk rock in its earliest days in the 70s was in New York with the CBGB scene, with groups like Patti Smith Group and Television, and my favorites, the Ramones. It obviously had a huge influence on British punk, also because Malcolm McLaren, who was the manager of the Sex Pistols and the owner of the Sex Boutique in King's Road, where the Sex Pistols originated, Sex Pistols, they were the group of the shop, had been to New York in 74-75. He'd met the New York Dolls in 73-74 and loved them and went over to work with them. And while he was working with them in their disastrous last days, he encountered the CBGB scene and saw Richard Hell and the Ramones and people like that. And he thought, right, well, you know, I'll take some of this over. And he took, in fact, Cyril Sylvain of the New York Dolls' guitar and gave it to Steve Jones, back of the Sex Pistols back in London. So it was the idea of taking elements of the New York scene, but not lock, stock and barrel. And that's always been the thing. One of the reasons I think the New Yorkers get so uptight about the English scene is that actually the Brits went further with it than the New York groups could. And I was always very disappointed that the Ramones never made it as big as they should have done. I mean, that first Ramones album had a huge impact on British punk rock. Apart from the Sex Pistols, who were up and running before that album came out in April 76, I know because I went out and bought it the day it came out in the UK on import, and it was April 76. And the Sex Pistols, you know, slowed up and slowed down. They had tension and release in their songs, whereas all the British punk rock groups had that na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, thing going on, the Clash in particular and the Damn. I got a feeling inside of me, it's kind of strange, like a stormy sea. I don't know why, I don't know why, I guess these things have got to be. I've got a new rose, I've got a good, yes, I knew that I always would. I can't stop to mess around, but I got a brand new rose in town. And it was all as a result of seeing the Ramones. So the Ramones basically sped up British music.
We're talking to John Savage, author of England's Dreaming, getting a little bit of the background on what led up to the great explosion, the plethora of music that came out in 77. You were saying that the English took punk further. Now, Sex Pistols will have to deal with, But one of the fascinating things...
that sounds all
No. We love them. You've got to love the Sex Pistols. They're as iconic as the Ramones. But when I think of the enduring influence of 77 and English punk today, I'm much more likely to cite the Buzzcocks, Wire, X-Ray Specs. I mean, groups are forming today and really inspired by those sounds that were made in 77 and trying to take them somewhere new.
Well, that's because all the groups you cited were and are very good.
I mean, the whole point is about punk, and the same with anything else. There was a whole load of rubbish. And I remember being at the Roxy and seeing all the groups that came through. And every new punk group would play the Roxy. And some of them, man, they were so ropey. Eater. What was the point of that? They were so bad, and no amount of kind of retrospective, revisionism is going to make me think that they were good, because they weren't. From April 77, I was working as a journalist at Sounds magazine, which is one of the weekly music papers, along with the Enemy and the Melody Maker. You know, I was kind of on the punk detail, so it was my job to go out and find new groups. And I was very busy promoting X-Ray Specs and Buzzcocks and Wire and Subway Sect and Susie and the Banshees and American groups like Père Ubu. And I was writing about the Ramones. And I was starting to write by the end of the year about the early San Franciscan and Los Angeles punk rock scene, and both of which I think produced some terrific records, which are still not very well heard, particularly in your country. I think it's a great shame. Mm. I think there were loads of, and I was definitely not a Little Englander about this. I thought punk was always thought punk was an international movement, and that was the whole point of it. And I really got irritated when Brits, during 1977, started to say, well, this is ours, and, get very chauvinistic about it. Boring. And it's the same as people from New York getting chauvinistic about it. It's music. It's an idea. It's a really good idea. And everybody can participate,
No doubt about it. John, what about this amazing year of 77? The prelude to all of this, were bands like the Ramones, et cetera, giving some inspiration to the scene, the New York Dolls. Then there was the Vision. McLaren gets a lot of stick to this day from John Lydon and the other remaining Sex Pistols about what he did or didn't do for the band, mostly what he didn't do. But McLaren did have a vision. What was that vision that he brought to the Sex Pistols? Because at one point, some people over here were saying, well, this is sort of like the Monkees. It's sort of a manufactured band. Obviously, it was much greater than that. But at the start, McLaren was pulling some strings, wasn't he?
Yes. I started the book with talking about McLaren, because basically without McLaren, I don't think the whole thing would have happened. And just parenthetically, I think the interesting thing about a group that is manufactured or put together, and a lot of groups are manufactured or put together, is whether, number one, whether they produce good music, and number two, whether it actually connects with what people are feeling and thinking. If it connects with what people are thinking and feeling, then it's not a hype anymore. It's something that's real. And the Sex Pistols always played from the early days. In the interviews of the book, somebody said to me it was like they played with a mirror in front of them. They always got incredibly intense reactions, usually hostile to start with, but then there'd always be a few fans who'd come and see them, a few people who'd come and see them, and all those people, I'm thinking about Buzzcocks, I'm thinking about The Damned, I'm thinking about The Clash, would all go away and form groups, so that was incredible. And Malcolm, he was like an impresario. It was a bit like a British version of Warhol's factory. It was somebody who was pulling the strings, somebody who's in control. McLaren as Warhol had this kind of arena. He had the shops, which are like Warhol's factory. All these kids came and hung around in the shop. They're exposed to weird ideas. They went out and enacted these weird ideas. And so you start to get a scene. And once you get a scene, it's not just a bunch of lunatics. It's a scene. It's something that's happening.
The high priest of punk rock is Malcolm McLaren, owner of a punk rock fashion boutique and manager of the Sex Pistols, England's most controversial and, therefore, best-known punk rock group.
The teenage kids who follow punk rock in this country, in their style and form of dress is a total reaction against the packaging of youth clothing in this country. They are really concerned now with taking any form of clothing and making a statement with it by tearing it up, writing a slogan across it that suggests something of their own particular discontent.
McLaren made it happen. He had the clothes, they were very sharply defined. He put the band together. And I think his original vision was to have something like the Bay City Rollers. And of course, it's typical of McLaren that he actually messed up. And a lot of McLaren's great strokes were, in fact, him making mistakes. And what he created was something quite bizarre, which is this kind of small faces slash faces type backing band with, you know, a sort of Captain Beefheart acolyte over the top, which is John Lydon.
We'll be right back with more of our talk about 1977 with author John Savage. Then, Big Star's Jody Stevens will tell us about the song that got him hooked on Sonics. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.